Hi, you're listening to The Sociology Show, a podcast about absolutely anything to do with the wonderful world of sociology. Whether you're a teacher, a lecturer, a student, or just taking a passing interest, this podcast will look at a range of issues from social class, ethnicity, gender, sexuality, religion, crime, education, and anything else that sociology has to offer. My name is Matthew Wilkin, and each episode I will speak to someone working in the field of sociology and let them explain all about their own interests, their research, and their experiences. So, put your earphones in, turn the volume up, and let's be sociology geeks together, eh? Hello and welcome to The Sociology Show. This podcast is sponsored by Collins, high quality student books, teacher guides, and unbeatable value revision for GCSE and A-level sociology. Now, Sociology Show listeners can get 25% off Collins Sociology resources until the end of December 2021. And that includes a new book, How to Be a Sociologist, an inspiring introduction to studying sociology at A-level and university. If you want to take up this offer, simply head to collins.co.uk/sociology and enter the code Sociology Show. Terms and conditions apply, but as I say, that does run all the way through till December 2021. So do take up that offer. The Sociology Show podcast is also brought to you in association with Tutor to You Sociology, the exam performance specialist for A-level and GCSE sociology students and teachers. And so you can visit their website, which is at tutortoyou.net/sociology. And there you can pick up revision guides, flashcards, revision videos, and everything else that you need for your A-level or GCSE sociology needs. And so on to today's episode. It is the 1st of November 2021, as this episode is being released, and it is World Vegan Day. And so I decided to interview Linda Korenbockus to talk all things veganism. So without further ado, let's go over to the interview. Hi, Linda. Thank you very much for joining me on the Sociology Show podcast.
Thanks very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you. So I always get people to start by telling us a little bit about who you are and what you do, if you don't mind.
I am a sociology lecturer in further education. I've been doing that for about 15 years. I also am an independent scholar in critical animal studies and a vegan sociologist to boot. So been doing a lot of this stuff for quite a while. I have separate things I do. I'm a musician as well. I'm a bit of an artist. All that stuff keep me out of trouble. Just been trying to find out the reasons for veganism or lack of veganism, as the case may be, for the last 20 years. And academia has been the way to try and investigate that.
That's really interesting kind of link and connection. A lot of people are perhaps studying sociology at A-level, or GCSE, something like that, might not be aware that there is such thing as vegan sociology. You know, it's not a topic that immediately springs to mind. So what is it, you know, in its most simplest form? What do we mean by it?
That's a good question. It's actually a relatively recent discipline in terms of it having a label. It's come out of a lot of critical thinkers that have been looking at how animals are represented in a lot of the studies that they've looked at before. Recognising that a lot of the academic work that's out there already is actually quite speciesist in nature, because our society is. By speciesist, I mean in the same way as somebody could be racist or sexist, somebody can also feel that their species is superior to another. So from that respect, animals have always been a little bit overlooked. And I usually use the term non-human animals as well, because humans are clearly animals too. So vegan sociology, especially for students of sociology, they'll be aware of, you know, the different perspectives that they're having to look at, Marxism and feminism and interactionism and those kinds of things. And what vegan sociology does is try to use those different approaches to challenge is known as anthroparchy. So that's the domination of humans over other species. So you know, as opposed to patriarchy is obviously domination of men and so on. So it's this human supremacy idea that we need to try and undo, and sociology allows us to do that, because sociology's mission, the whole promise of sociology, was to try and establish what's wrong in the world and make it better. So in doing that with non-humans as well, it's as important and equally relevant to people as all the other traditional stuff that maybe looked at before. I don't know if that's a good definition of it, but
yeah, it does. I was just I was just wondering if it aligns with any of the sociological theories. Does it align with Marxism or postmodernism, or is it kind of unique?
Yeah. No, well, no, it's just a vegan take on it all, I suppose, in the same way as feminism came out as a response to the lack of interest in women's issues in sociology, but it's still a sociology in and of itself. Veganism is a response to the lack of interest in non-human animal issues, and yet, I mean, animals are everywhere in our lives, right? Whether they're on our plate eating them, or whether we're going to the zoo or have them in entertainment, or whether or not they're just part of our lives as companion animals, they're everywhere. And we're looking at human society without and almost overlooking them. They're kind of neglected in it, even though they form a major part of it. So I don't know that, I mean, it's not a separate discipline, it's just a sub-discipline perhaps. And there wasn't really a space for vegan sociology before. There's been critical animal studies scholars, and there's been people doing, you know, maybe more biological animal work and that kind of thing. But now we've got an environmental movement as well that's kind of creeping into more and more into theory. So this is an extension of all of that, really.
And you said you've been involved for 20 years or so. I was just thinking where it really kind of is seen as the start of vegan sociology. Where was the kind of boom, if you like, in popularity of it?
I think we're just having it, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, I mean, there wasn't anything for me when I first went vegan when I was 25-ish, something like that. I don't even remember letting my age away. And there wasn't anything then. There wasn't even vegan food around, never mind. Now we've got plant-based food everywhere. It's absolute squish to be vegan now. It's easy peasy. But way back when, it wasn't something that was widely known about or catered for, certainly not. And you were having to always explain what a vegan was, whereas I think that's shifted in the last couple of years especially. And the reason I even got to social science was I was trying to find an explanation for why it is that, you know, I found out some information and instantly went, well, I can't have any part of this. I want to do something to change things, you know, make things better, like most people that campaign about things do. So I just thought wrongly that all I had to do was tell people what I'd just learned and they would go vegan instantly too. And it didn't happen. In fact, I faced a lot of ridicule, as many of us have in the past and sometimes still do. And I thought, right, well, why is that then? Because surely people care about animals, right? We live in the UK, I'm in Scotland, and you know, we've got different organisations that stand up for animal welfare and all that, and yet you think if I tell people what happens to animals, they would, given the fact that we're an animal loving nation, would change what they do or how they think about it, and not really anybody did. So that's when I went on to do a higher, which is like the A-level equivalent in Scotland. I went to do a higher psychology at night classes. I was still working and thinking I would find the answer, and got a whole bunch more questions instead. And by the time I was finished, I'm still not finished. I'm doing my PhD now. I'm still trying to find out what's going on there. I wanted to know why it is that people just don't seem to want to have the or face up to the truth of how we treat non-human animals.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's been kind of discouraging at times. It's been quite depressing at times, thinking that actually the road ahead has always been quite difficult. But now when I see things, there's been people writing about this for a long time. David Nybert, KPEGS, wrote a book in 2014. I can't remember the years. She wrote a great book about animals and sociology. There's a lady called Erica Cudworth. She's been writing about this kind of stuff as well. Carol J. Adams, the feminist writer, she's been writing about her relationship, women's relationship with non-human animals for a very long time. So there's been stuff around that we can now say would be vegan sociology, but it wasn't really termed that way. And in fact, the International Association of Vegan Sociologists was only formed last year as a response to there needing to be a place where we could all gather with our respective sub-disciplines and maybe bring this forward and make it more of a thing, you know, that maybe one day will be part of a curriculum, ideally.
And you just mentioned we're experiencing the boom right now. Do we have any estimation within the UK, for example, how many people do classify themselves as vegan?
Well, there are a couple of competing claims about that, actually. The Vegan Society did a survey, but there was also something done on some website. it's still in the single figures in terms of percentages.
Right.
I think if you were to survey how many people would consider themselves plant-based, the figure would be significantly higher, because a lot of people will do the diet part without going along with the ethic part, which is veganism is an ethic. It's a lived identity, whereas I think that maybe the plant-based movement, whilst it's great and it's certainly made life easier for those of us that have been eating plants for a long time, it's slightly different. So maybe the two have been conflated and get confused at the minute. So I think the figure for ethical veganism isn't maybe as high as the figure overall for people eating plant-based diet. That's not a helpful answer, I appreciate.
No, it's very difficult to measure. I wondered if it's something that could be part of a future census, to be honest.
Oh, no, well, that's interesting you say that, because a former colleague of mine, Jordi Kasimitjana, he was successful start of last year, 2020, I think, in taking a case against his employer to a tribunal to have veganism recognised in human rights law as a philosophical belief that warrants protection under that legislation. So it could very well be that kind of thing will be accepted as a social identity that you can tick a box with in some kind of questionnaire, or equal opportunities forms it'd be lovely. It's a nice thought. It's certainly something to aspire to. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've just had the most recent one, haven't we? So maybe within the next 10 years, that's definitely a possibility.
Yeah, that's true. I think the next census is due March 22. So that's quite soon. I don't think there'll be time for that, but yeah, maybe the one after that.
Yeah,
we can check in back then and see how that went.
Exactly. So you mentioned about people's perhaps reluctance to move on to it. And I'd be a good sample for you, Linda, because ethically, morally, politically, I know it's the right thing to do. Okay,
but I
am a meat eater, so I'm sort of your classic example of someone that knows what they should be doing but don't do it. So, why do you think people like myself, I hold my hands up, are reluctant to make that move?
It's interesting. There are a variety of different versions or approaches to why this might be. There's quite a lot in social psychology. One of the things is called the meat paradox, where people just are, because we're socialized right into accepting that certain animals are for eating.
Yeah.
And other ones are for, having in your house, and other ones are for going and looking at in cages and whatnot. So it makes the transition towards putting them all in the one category of things to be cared for or to be considered quite a difficult one. And I mean, this is ingrained in our society from, not just in our lifetimes, but all the generations before us. So it's a difficult shift. I wrote a paper last year called The Peppa Pig Paradox, because you have a situation where it's not even about categorising one animal one way and a different species a different way. Sometimes it's the same species. So you've got kids sitting loving Peppa Pig and having T-shirts on and little bags and things. At the same time, their parents give them a bacon butty to eat at breakfast time or lunch. So it's this real lack of willingness. But then also, this is where it ties into a lot of sociological theory, because the powerful in society make a lot of money from the oppression of animals, right? So you've got a capitalist system that requires consumption, right? So if people are consuming animals, and they do at a great rate, every second we speak, there are hundreds of animals across the world being killed for people to eat. So it's so normalized that there's definitely something that we need to do to shift conscience about it. And I think it's happening. But if you believe in social justice, as lots of sociologists do, if you're committed to equality and consideration for life, then non-human animals should be included in that by definition, really. So I suppose the question that people have to answer is, what is it that prevents them individually from doing it? And it might just be habit. A lot of it's just habit, right?
Yes.
You always eat this, so you always eat this. And then maybe they go buy one of those alternative meat products, when it's not quite the same. So they're put off, it seems like a bit more hassle or whatever. But when it becomes an ethical perspective, and you're right, my husband's the same, actually. He completely and utterly adheres to the ethics of it. He totally understands the ethics of it, but he still isn't quite willing to make that final step to being fully vegan, because it's easier and we still fundamentally put our own taste first. essentially. And there's not enough people, there's not enough in society to get us to challenge that. So I guess what vegan sociology is trying to do is to deconstruct all of those ideas and see how interconnected they are with human rights, actually, too. So I was an animal rights activist for many years, still would still consider myself to be so to some extent. But where you get subjugated animals, you also get marginalised humans, whether it's from them working in industry where they're, you know, the working conditions are incredibly poor, whether it's to do with poverty and the fact that most of the cheap processed food is laden with animal fat and that kind of thing, or whether it's to do with climate change and the contributions that animal agriculture makes to that. It affects us directly, but we think it's indirect, if I'm making any sense at all.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is just pure coincidence, but as you're talking, my puppy sat looking at me whining with fear in his eyes. I think everyone's trying to make me feel guilty right now. It's working. It's working.
You can only make nobody can make you feel guilty. You can only make yourself feel guilty.
That's true, true. If you can hear him whining in the background, maybe it's what we're talking about.
Maybe.
I totally agree with the idea of habit. It's ingrained. It's socialized into us. And you know, I hold my hands up and say this as well, that it, a bit like when you're trying to encourage people to give up alcohol or smoking or something like that.
That
people enjoy it. You know, I'm not going to deny that I enjoy the taste, you know, it's an enjoyable experience. I know that's a selfish thing to say, but it's not like you're asking people to give up something that they don't enjoy in the first place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. But again, I remember I was raised eating meat. I didn't, like I was in my 20s before I went vegan, and I remember being at my gran's, and bless her, she's long gone now, but she would make us like stew or something, and everything about the flavour of that was in the gravy. It was never in the meat. And I remember sitting chewing, oh, it's just never ending, this thing I'm eating. Once the gravy's gone, it all seemed a little bit, you know. So, but then, yeah, people's lack of willingness to, I mean, I think people see it as a sacrifice, and I think this is where the problem lies. If you can see it as so connected with everybody and everything around us, a lot of the diseases that are rife in kind of affluent societies originate in our consumption of dairy or meat and all these kinds of things. So I mean, it's not that we're in the same way as smoking, right? It's not that people don't know people know it's bad for them.
Yeah.
You don't need to, you know, you don't need to see horrible pictures inside the cigarette packets which are there to know this stuff. And sticking it in your face doesn't make any difference either. You just open the packet and ignore the picture. So there needs to be a different approach to certainly ones I've attempted in the past, which is just like, just tell people, show people, and they'll be so horrified they'll change their life. No, I did it. I don't know why. It must have just been the right moment in time and the right thing. But most people don't respond that way. And would rather not know, because it makes them easier to continue with what they're doing. So it's called strategic ignorance, this idea that it's easier just not to know, which suggests, though, then that you must know there's something wrong with it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, it's about then how you get people to, just even you know that they know that, but how do you get them to make that final and very, very straightforward step? And I suppose that's where a lot of the availability of products now, although some people accuse it of being a bit of, you know, a greenwash, you know, like all these big companies that have relied on making money out of dead animals for so long are now producing vegan burgers and all this kind of stuff. But listen, it's better than having nothing at all. But then maybe it just makes people feel a bit better that, you know, meat-free Mondays as a campaign.
Yes.
That's all fine, but that's still, you know, 6 days out of seven where the exploitation of animals is in your fridge or on your plate, or, oh, it's really tricky. If I knew the answer, the world would be vegan by now.
The Sociology Show podcast relies on the kind contributions of sponsorship and donations. If you enjoy the show, then you can help with the hosting costs by donating as little as £5 on the GoFundMe page. Simply visit uk.gofundme.com and search for The Sociology Show. If you can donate, then you will be sent a Sociology Show pen as a small thank you for your continued support of the show.
Well, in terms of the change, you must be seeing a generational change. You know, I notice each group of students that I teach each year, there's more and more that that are vegan. So
yeah,
do you think it is just a process that we'll see over generations as it becomes more popular and meat eating phases out?
Yeah, I hope so. And actually, I didn't even think in my lifetime we would have got to where we are in terms of people's view of alternatives to animal protein. There's a lot of work being done in the alternative protein market, you know, about whether it's lab cultured meat or just, I don't know. There's so many different options that people have that remove the exploitation of animals, that, and it's so straightforward a switch. And I think people are starting to realise that. I do think younger generations are more open to new ideas, but that's probably always been the case. Yeah. It's just we're living it now. You know, I'm in my middle age now, so I guess I see it. And now, me saying that I'm vegan isn't like weird anymore. There's somebody else that might say, oh, me too. And you're right, it's a bit of a shift. My daughter's been vegan since birth. She's in primary four at school now. I don't know what year that equates to in England. Year six or something. I'm not really sure how it all works. So she's 7 years old anyway. And she's quite happy. She's still the only vegan at her school. But I think where we live is kind of unusual here anyway still. We're not in a, you know, I'm in the suburbs. We're not in a city or anything. So she's the only vegan in the whole school. She gets upset for being different, but it's not that she wants to then stop being vegan. She wants everyone else to be vegan too, which is a lovely way of looking at it. But yeah, it's happening. It's a shift. And a lot of the time, especially for younger children or young adults, it's difficult for them to make a shift at home if they still live at home when other people are still ingrained in that. You know, there's the study about the four ends of meat eating. You know, the people think it's nice, obviously, just as we spoke about, I quite like the taste or whatever, that it's necessary and natural somehow, that we can't survive without it. So there's all this kind of approach. So it can sometimes be difficult to get the older generations to accept what the younger generations are saying, but that applies to so many things, including, you know, approaches to gender rights and these kinds of things too. So it's just another string in that bow, I suppose. But I did not think in my lifetime that there would be a world where I could go to probably, I mean, I don't go to fast food places, but if I did, I could get something to eat. Like, I never saw that happening. And now I'm at the stage where my sister, when my daughter's a teenager and her and her pals are all going out for whatever it is they do after school and going to all these places, that she's not going to be left out. There will be something on the menu for her, if not a choice of things, which is, and that's like a mind-blowing thing, that, you know, it's not just, oh, well, you can have the tomato pasta.
Yes.
You still always get offered every, you know, now it's like, actually, oh, you can have this or that or the next thing, and it's a different world. So, yeah, I think, I hope that continues. I don't think it's a passing phase in society. I do think with the move towards caring more about the environment, which younger people do, and they know that's their future, I think a lot of older people have, you know, it is relevant to them, but it's not going to affect them in the same way as it's going to affect young people now. So I hope the two go hand in hand because they're linked, because, you know, we've got an earth and a bunch of people and beings on it, so it's impossible to separate. So yeah, I'm hopeful.
And talking about the hope and the future, obviously one of the things that does push it in terms of recognition, 1st of November, World Vegan Day.
Indeed.
And other than just recognising it, what is the day all about?
Well, from a variety of different places and different organisations usually celebrate this day. It originated with the Vegan Society, which is now incredibly old in the grand scheme of things. And there's always a celebration of veganism to raise awareness of what, first of all, what veganism is, the fact that it's possible, the fact that you're not going to end up being nutritionally deficient just because you choose not to eat animals. And it's a recognition and celebration, I think, that there's so much going on, so much work going on to try and this isn't about being self-righteous, which I think a lot of people think of veganism as. It's actually about self-protection of our planet and protection of all the beings on it and feeling better about it. And there's a lot of different things happening, including in terms of vegan sociology. We have released a student journal, the first of its kind, vegan sociology journal, which is available online today, free to everybody and free forever to everybody. And we hope to do this every year on World Vegan Day, is to release a journal of new work in the area, as well as there's an international association of vegan sociologists, and they're always working away on papers and things. So this is an opportunity for especially students who haven't got to postgraduate status yet, you know, and they've got something to say, and their voice is important. So we're giving an outlet to that where it hasn't existed before. And World Vegan Day is a perfect day to release that. So that's what we've done.
Brilliant. And where can people find out more about that? Did you just want to give out the details?
With pleasure. They can find it at www.vegansociology.com. There's a bunch of different information there, including some information again on what is vegan sociology. Corey Lee Wren, one of the founders of the association, also has a couple of posts on there to illustrate how easy it is to link the theories in sociology to non-animal issues. And there's also details of it. There's an annual conference, and also there's a journal page which you can access. We're also calling for papers for the next issue of the journal as well. So that's, you'll find all that there. At 4 p.m. this afternoon, it was GMT now, not BST anymore, because the clocks went back yesterday. We are holding our launch event online. It's already well subscribed. And if people don't manage to access that, and a link is on the journal page, then it's being recorded, and that will be uploaded to the pages as well. So vegansociology.com has everything, resources, some information, some links, people who are involved, and also just, you know, if people want to get more involved with just being part of this community, which is what it is. It's a place where all of us that have felt a little bit on the sidelines and on the margins of our discipline in the past have been able to come together and create this space that we can work for animals within.
Great. And what if people want to find out more about you particularly, Linda? Can they follow you on Twitter? Website as
yes,
well?
Yes, they can. They can follow me on Twitter at LM Corin Bocus, and corinbocus.com is my website. I need to update that actually. And I'm on Facebook, but Twitter's probably best. I'm learning very quickly that Twitter's the thing to do when you're a kind of an academic kind of person, which I believe that I may class myself as now. It's a little bit, you know, I'm a working class kid from like the schemes in Livingston in Scotland. So like it's quite an awkward place to have ended up. But, you know, these things happen. So, yeah, they can fight. My name's quite unique. Therefore, you can always Google me and you'll find something. Hopefully nothing too problematic.
Yeah. If you search and you find a picture of a cute black dog, you've found the right account.
You found me. Yes, indeed.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Linda, and enjoy World Vegan Day, and good luck with all the events as well.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And yeah, it's a pleasure not just to be talking about veganism, which I do a lot, but actually that link with sociology, because it's certainly something that needs done, and we're on it. So people are welcome to join the ride.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you once again, Linda. Take care.
Cheers, Matthew.
The Sociology Show podcast relies on the kind contributions of sponsorship and donations. If you enjoy the show, then you can help with the hosting costs by donating as little as £5 on the GoFundMe page. Simply visit uk.gofundme.com and search for The Sociology Show. If you can donate, then you will be sent a Sociology Show pen as a small thank you for your continued support of the show.